This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by the Humboldt County Collective, Eco Groovy Deals, Bear Extraction House, and Lost Coast Science. To all of our sponsors, thank you very much. We could not do it without you. We start with my grandmother, who once said to me, or maybe more than once, if you would just listen, you might learn something. Well, proving her right, in this hour, we're going to follow up on something we heard in last month's Humboldt Chronicles. Listening to Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel, he seemed unconvinced that the state's track and trace system was working well. Hearing that from someone in law enforcement got our attention, so we decided to look into it for this episode. As a reminder, Track and Trace is an internet-based statewide system used to record the inventory and movement of cannabis through the entire California commercial supply chain, ensuring consumers that the products they buy have been grown legally, have been tested, and are safe. But Sheriff Hansel says Track and Trace is not keeping up with the market and needs a lot of improvement.
The state needs to invest in their testing facilities, needs to, you know, or regulate and get these testing labs online. Also, their track and trace system has to be in place. Every licensed dispensary should only be selling products that have a track and trace stamp and seal approval on them, so you know that it is a legitimate state licensed, you know, marijuana, you know, being sold here. That's taxed and it's been tested and everything. Right now they don't have that, and so that's really, really necessary to make that happen. Now they're in the process. There's a lot of things that still need to happen, but they're slowly getting there. But the state has to really, they have to pump some money into this program. They got to get it online. They have to do whatever it takes, because that is going to support the legal industry. That's going to support, you know, these licensed dispensaries, and only taking the supply from the legal market. And it's like, it's ridiculous. How are we not supporting the licensed growers? They have to go through all this regulation and everything like that, and then they have all this product, and like, where are they going to sell it? Because the dispensaries have already bought it from an illegal source, or they bought it from somewhere else, and they can't verify. There's not a stamp to verify that they bought through legal means.
That's what got our attention. Now what? Start asking more questions, that's what. So, Larry and I went to someone who is working inside the supply chain to get his view. He's Joe Wynn, and he's with Sisu Extracts in Eureka. You'll hear him refer to Metric. Metric is a cloud-hosted reporting system used by licensed cannabis businesses in California to manage and report supply chain activities as required by state rules. We asked Joe if he agreed with Sheriff Hansel.
Yeah, I do agree that's true, and I believe as the metric walls are coming down, it's happening less and less. But I do think we have a system here that is faced with the difficult task of regulating some of the most rebellious and driven and creative people that have ever assembled in the world. So I think particularly when cannabis farmers as a group on both sides of the market are faced with threats, they're put in situations where they have to think creatively and outside of the box. And while we're here living in full regulatory world, running everything in a buttoned up, you know, business manner, I think there's a lot of folks out there who are struggling moving into the compliant market and aren't left with lots of choices. And so then, yeah, I absolutely agree. People are getting creative and bending the rules and or breaking the rules on a regular basis. And then I think Metric has been designed and rolled out in a way that will continue to limit and create new obstacles to people doing that. And once everybody's on Metric, that's where we'll see things really begin to button up. And it will become much more difficult for material from outside the regulated space to move into the regulated space.
So there's some optimism there for the future. That's what I heard anyway. Question is that optimism well placed? Let's find out. Next stop, Sacramento and the office of Richard Parrott. He's director of Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing, which is a division of the California Department of Food and Agriculture. His office licenses cultivators, enforces compliance of licensees with the laws, and administers the track and trace system.
High-level overview, the system is an internet-based system. It's an inventory tracking system, so it's intended to track cannabis and cannabis products from cultivation to retail. So it's intended to track the products as it moves from one licensee to another, and then as it changes form, meaning it changes from cannabis flower into a manufactured product, or if it changes from larger packages into smaller packages of, you know, specific units of cannabis or cannabis products. Every licensee is responsible for entering data into the system. They'll have a user ID and password. They'll be able to log in and enter their information. They will be affixing unique identifiers, which are radio frequency ID tags. They will be affixing those tags to either cannabis plants or packages of cannabis or cannabis products. So every licensee will be responsible for whatever they are doing with that cannabis. If they're a cultivator, they're tagging plants. They're going to enter that information into the system. When the plants are harvested, they will be entering information about when the plants are harvested. And then as those plants are packaged and moved on through distribution, when the next licensee takes possession, they will enter information in and, you know, along throughout the distribution chain until the product gets to retail. So cultivator would have the plant tagged originally when they harvest the plant. They'll be weighing the plant. They'll be accounting for any of the plant waste. They'll be weighing the product after it's dried and cured. When it's packaged and goes to a distributor will take possession of it. If a distributor takes the packages and makes smaller packages, then they would be putting tags on those packages and entering the information into the system. When the product goes to lab for testing, that information will be in the system as well. When the retailer gets the finished final product, they'd be entering in the system that they've received it. When the product is transported by the distributor, it always will be accompanied by a manifest, and that the track and trace system will include that information as well, and as well as the driver will be keeping a paper copy of the manifest in the vehicle.
As you just heard, Metric is a pretty complex system with numerous record-keeping obligations along the path from seed to sale. We asked Richard to assess the acceptance of the system among its community of users.
I think there's probably some mixed feelings there, just like with regulation as well. It's new. It's required by state law. There's going to be, I think, pockets of people, like anything else that's new. There's some that are fine with it. They'll adapt. There's others where it's going to be harder, and it's just going to take a little more conversation with those people. You know, they'll learn how to use the system. We're doing some workshops right now across the state. We actually had two this week up in the north part of the state, and we're having some more later this month. But our two this week, one was in Ukiah and one was in Eureka. And the goal there is to give some more overview and more detailed information to the licensees about the system, about what they're required to do, but then also have an opportunity for them to ask questions. I don't have a one-size-fits-all answer on the level of acceptance, but I could say it'll be scattered across the state. Some people will be fine, others may not for a while.
As with any tech-based system, in order for Metric and Track and Trace to work well, support is crucial. In fact, there are those who say that this is the crux of the complaints. Not enough staffing to get questions answered. Here's Joe Wynn of CSU Extracts.
It can be at times difficult to just get basic correspondence going with them and get timely responses. And it's not that they're not trying, it's that they're swarmed. It's that, you know, they 1,300 cultivation licenses and 1,000 manufacturing licenses and several hundred retail licenses. And every single one of those groups is guaranteed to have 3 to 5 questions a week, right? So if we take 4,000 licenses, give them each 5 questions a week, I got 20,000 inbound questions. And I don't know, there's something like 20 people in that department. And so each one of them is going to catch 1,000 questions a week. It's just not functional. efficiently possible. With the amount of tax revenue being generated by this system, or that would be generated by the system if it was actually being captured, I think the funds are there to properly back up their departments. If there was anybody in the state who could use an extra hand, it would be the people on the back end of that system. I think many of the regulatory agencies, I think there's a lot of areas where they lack the manpower to do the task that's been given to them. So I think everybody in cannabis today has a harder job than they did years ago. I think it's kind of continually moved in that direction, and I think our regulators face similar stuff. It's a rather thankless position. They catch a lot of flack, and they've got a really, really big task and not a really, really big team to deal with it. But as far as how much effort we're putting into, James here, for example, was brought in from Colorado and had worked on similar things out there, and his full-time job is interacting with metric and compliance. And I don't think James sleeps a lot.
After talking with Joe, we asked Richard Parrott at Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing about the same issue.
We have technical support line that the users can call. That is, it's a metric support line. If I could give that number, it's 1-877-566-6506. That support line is active from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday Pacific time. We've got an email support at metric.com. I'm not aware of and haven't heard to date of anyone from the industry saying that they haven't been able to get the support that they need. We intend to adequately address the industry's concerns.
We're going to take a quick break and return with our discussion in a few moments. Coming up next, we'll try to assess whether unregulated, untested products are finding their way into the legal market or not. Also this hour, we're going to get to the question about vaping. Before we go to a break, though, a listing of events you might be interested in. It's our cannabis calendar.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Cannabis Calendar, brought to you by the Humboldt Chronicles. The calendar features information on upcoming cannabis-related conferences and events that take place within a day's drive of Humboldt County. The World CBD Expo will take place at the San Jose Convention Center on Friday, November 1st through Sunday, November 3rd. The event will feature vendors, presentations, and seminars focused on CBD products. Registration and other event information can be found at worldcbdexpo.com. The Humboldt County Growers Alliance is presenting House of Humboldt on Friday, November 8th. This is a two-part business-to-business event with an afternoon session called Meet the Buyers, taking place at the Adorney Center. Meet the Buyers is designed to highlight buyers of Humboldt cannabis, such as purchasing distributors or manufacturers, and to connect with licensed cultivators and manufacturers. The evening session held at the Eagle House is called Meet Humboldt. This is an event for licensed purchasers to explore Humboldt's 2019 harvest, showcased by cultivators and manufacturers. More information about both sessions is available at hcga.co. Finally, the Humboldt County Planning and Building Department reminds cannabis cultivators that pre-existing cannabis operations, or those existing prior to December 31st, 2015, can still apply for county permits to become legal, but the application window will only remain open through the end of 2019. No new applications for pre-existing cultivation sites will be accepted after December 31st, 2019. If you'd like to have your event listed on the cannabis calendar, email us the details at studio@humboldtchronicles.com.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. If you're just joining us, in the first part of our discussion, we established that there are calls to improve California's track and trace, the statewide system used to record the inventory and movement of cannabis through the California commercial supply chain, helping to ensure consumers that the products they buy are legal and safe. Once again, here's Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel, who says the problem is that track and trace in California is lagging behind the fast-growing and ever-changing state cannabis industry and market.
The state doesn't really have a really good track and trace program set up right now, so we see a lot of a legal market infusing with the legal market. I think there's probably illegal product that is going through licensed dispensaries or going to these different manufacturing facilities and being converted into oil. And until the state gets that track and trace program in place, I don't see, I see the lines still being blurred between the legal and illegal market.
Here's a question underlying all of this. Is it realistic to expect that all unregulated cannabis will be either eliminated or, if not eliminated, kept out of the regulated market? Here again is Joe Wynn from Sisu Extracts.
In all circumstances, that is prohibited. Okay. Now, the question is whether or not there's a completely effective mechanism for sifting out, identifying, and preventing that from happening. And I think that's incredibly difficult. We're moving from a space where it was completely illegal to do anything and everything that is ever done here, to a space where we're trying to regulate and organize that same behavior. And I think if we're stuck with the reality that under full prohibition, when people were risking 30 to life and or death to operate inside of this market, if they're then faced with tax or regulatory or licensure-based consequences, that I think it will be hard to dissuade people using exclusively that. And so I do think there will be a perpetual filtering of the bad actors out of the market. And I think there will be events that spur that to happen in a more rapid way. Like what we're seeing right now with black market vapor cartridges causing sickness has caused all legal cartridge makers to band together, begin voluntarily testing for these contaminants, voluntarily providing a higher level of certification than even what the state requires, and is dramatically increasing pressure on the state to regulate unpermitted retail facilities throughout the state. So I think as things like this continue to happen, we will see more and more of these situations occur. I think this is going to be one of the primary themes of cannabis regulation in this state over the next 1 to 2 years. I think, again, I'll go back to the fact that we have passionate, relentless operators who've made their living this way for generations, who now face regulatory hurdles that are higher than some of them can deal with, and they're left with a finite number of directions they can go. And it is explicitly a group of people who have been able to recognize opportunity and move on it for decades under the most extreme pressures imaginable. So I think if you take that group of people and drop them into a regulated system, I think they will push on the edges of the box at all times, or just flat obliterate the edges of the box in some cases. I think like us, there are other operators in the state who have chosen to, from the very beginning of our existence, to not allow anything like that. And we work really, really hard to find out when or if anyone is trying any of that with us and push that business away immediately. But I do think when regulating an unregulated industry, you're absolutely going to take a bumpy road. The reason this hasn't been done is it's not easy, right? And I don't think, you know, if it's worth it, it won't be easy. And if it's easy, it won't be worth it, is the old Bob Marley quote. And I think this is one of those things. Bringing people safe, compliant cannabis is worth it in a big way. And that means it's not going to be easy in a big way. I mean, it's a huge state, and it's an enormous chunk of the economy. And as far as cannabis is concerned, California is the battle that decides the entire rest of the nation and how it falls in a lot of different ways. So I think it's an important thing to look at. I think it's important that we get as many of our brothers and sisters as possible onto this other side of the fence with us. And that'll happen in a lot of different ways. We'll get everybody permitted and operating on their own as possible. And like here at CISU, we have quite a few people who were from the old world, have had enough bad experiences over there that they just made the complete shift to the fully licensed, you know, world of the BCC and the CDPH. And there are some major advantages to being all the way on this side of the line. I rest easier at night knowing that I can put my money in a bank. There are definitely advantages on this side of the road that I think will continue to entice more and more people. I also think total elimination of the black market is an incredibly difficult thing to do. I think the most realistic prospect we have of that actually happening is when cannabis is available everywhere at a cost and a quality that's better than you can get it in the black market. And that being said, at this very moment, there is someone in Boone, North Carolina, driving an old pickup with a bunch of gallon jugs of moonshine in the back, even though you can get a higher quality tested, regulated product at every store in town around him. That guy is still out there running. So I think a lot of our old timers will continue to do what they've done for a long time. And I think whatever the consequences may be inherently, I do think the pressures on them will continue to increase.
As in the hills of North Carolina, here in California, clearly the most important issue for consumers is whether they can be confident that the products they buy in the legal market are clean and safe. What level of confidence regarding safety is there among those in the industry and those who regulate the industry? First, to Richard Parrott with Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing in the State Department of Food and Agriculture.
Without having more data and having a longer period of time where licensees have been using this system, it's too early to draw any conclusions. However, looking forward with all of the licensees in California in the system and using the track and trace system, over time, we will be, the system is, will allow us to have indicators that would let us know if things don't add up regarding what the volume of product that may be moving through a particular licensee's hands. I want to be real clear, too. The system in and of itself, it does not prevent inversion or diversion of product. The system is intended to have a licensee enter information and track and account for all of the product that is in their possession or that they acquire from another licensee and then sell on to another licensee on through the distribution chain. But we'll be able through, you know, the data that's in the system, we'll be able to tell if things don't look like they're happening correctly. But you need a complementary inspection and enforcement program to go along with a system like this, which is what we have, meaning that if there's something that doesn't look right, well, then, you know, it's an opportunity for us to go out to that licensed business, talk to them, conduct an inspection, look at their records, and make sure everything looks proper.
There's no doubt that it is difficult, if not impossible, in a market the size of California, to keep all unpermitted cannabis out of the regulated market. Here's Joe from Sisu Extracts.
I think at most stages in most systems, there's a way to break the system. If a guy can get out of a max security prison with hundreds of armed men and millions of dollars of infrastructure designed to keep him in a 10-foot by 10-foot area, and he can get out. We've heard that story happen 1,000 times across this country in the past century. I think it's very, very, you know, it's the build a better mousetrap thing. You can build a system and then someone will break it. You can build a system and then someone will break it. And the question is, how do we build a system that allows operators to operate with as much ease and reasonable regulation as possible while simultaneously allowing the economic protections that should be afforded by going through this process.
That said, Joe is still confident about the quality and safety of the products making it through the supply chain and into the legal retail market.
I would say absolutely. And I think there's direct evidence of that. Like, for example, there was just on major network news in the past 72 hours, they used CannaSafe, which is a laboratory that we work with, and they went out and grabbed random samples from illicit facilities in LA doing black market retail, and they went out and grabbed vapor cartridges from tested and certified brands. When they did that, they found the vitamin E acetate, the major concern that many people have. They found that in 7 out of 10 black market carts for sale in California, and they found 10 out of 10 to be over the pesticide limits in black market sales. When they tested 10 out of 10 of the legal carts passed for pesticides, and 0 contained vitamin E acetate. And so, like, on a blind test where we're just grabbing 10 samples, we found a representative sample of perfection in the regulated space, and we found 70% to 100% out of compliance with significant problems that would be a health concern for anybody in the other market. So I do think that even though there is material bleed over, all product is required to go through the same compliance standards at the end. All product must be quarantined on site. All product will be sampled at random by the laboratories. So everything does get shoved through that bottleneck, and this is the advantage of creating it. It's both from the taxation and the regulatory standpoint. After compliance, it is very, very rigorous. And I do believe that there is very, very consistent product quality from a contaminant standpoint on shelves today in the legal retail space. And I do believe that much of the material that doesn't meet those requirements is ending up in these black market facilities that are not licensed cannabis shops. So I think if you want to make a decision to choose clean product, your really only choice is to go to a licensed cannabis retailer.
After a quick break, we'll dig into the debate and the concerns about vaping and vaping products and get our guests' thoughts and recommendations. Back in a moment. This is the Humboldt Chronicles. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. We want to take some time here in this program to get some feedback from our guests on the current vaping debate and concerns about vaping products. Health and safety worries are at a peak with regard to vaping. We read a lot about it and hear a lot about it. Let's ask those in and close to the industry what they think. First, to Joe Wynn at Sisu Extracts.
I think what we're seeing here is our first definitive cases of result that regulation is creating a safer condition for cannabis users. This is one of our first, and I'm sure somebody else out there will point out 3 or 4 others. we're really looking at a situation here where there is a known and defined thing. I think vapor cartridges have been going out for quite some time. This isn't a relatively new phenomenon, and where we really saw this begin was with black market folks using a contaminant called vitamin E acetate to cut jars. Very much they have a jar of distillate, they're adding another jar of vitamin E acetate to it because it looks and behaves like it from a visual perspective, and they're just cutting the product to make more money. This is much like in any other black market environment, everybody cuts everything. It's the exact opposite of what anyone in the legal market would want to do, because we have potency testing. If you cut it, nobody buys 50% oil. It's just not an option. And now that the coalition has been formed of all the largest extractor groups and we're all voluntarily doing vitamin E acetate testing, it's going to start to be a thing on shelves that this has or has not been tested for this contaminant. Now, I don't think anyone in the legal space is likely to use that material because people have worked and fought and bled and put all of their heart and money into opening an extract lab somewhere. I don't think they're going to do something that is so definably making their product worse, very easy to catch, and if caught would end up in total elimination of your business from the market. I really don't see that behavior happening for most participants in the market, especially your larger operators. But I do think customer behavior I think there is a customer who will care, and I believe there's also a customer who won't. Marlboro Reds are selling like hotcakes. Right, and they're dropping 1,000 bodies a day in this country, and Americans are still buying them steady. So the unfortunate part is this goes back to my statement about prohibition, that this will continue until you can't get it cheaper at a black market. And one of the major hurdles that exists for us generating, we can definitely generate a better product, we can definitely generate a cleaner product, we cannot today generate a cheaper product because of the taxing regulation we're facing. So I think things that we'll see in the future will be an easement of the taxes as prices commoditize, and then as those come off, the retail prices will be able to trickle down as well, and then we will be able to have a comparable product. Like if a customer's choosing between maybe a poisonous cart for $6 or a guaranteed clean cart for $7, I think more people will make that choice today. But today they're looking at maybe a dirty cart for $10 and guaranteed a clean cart for $20. There's enough folks out there who just have $20 in their pocket and they're going to go for that lower price thing. So efficient production and rolling back the extreme taxes on cannabis are probably some of the best ways we can help convert those buyers over to the legal market.
Now to Richard Parrott at Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing at the California Department of Food and Agriculture. We asked him about vaping with regard to protections provided by the track and trace system.
Part of the licensing structure in California for all the licensed product is it goes through very rigorous testing. That product has to be tested before it can move on into the market. So the whole point there about licensing, testing, all of the environmental regulations are protecting public health and safety.
Before we close this edition of the Humboldt Chronicles, I want to circle back to some specifics about the track and trace system and Metric. The whole safety issue concerning vaping products reminds us of the importance of monitoring that happens along the supply chain. Leading up to legalization of commercial cannabis in California, it was apparent to all who were paying attention that a project like this in a state this size would be bumpy at best. And here we are. We asked Joe Wynn at Sisu Extracts, who is smack in the middle of that supply chain, whether Metric and Track and Trace still are really necessary. Keep in mind, complying with Track and Trace creates another layer of work for folks like Joe. Here's what he had to say in response.
Is Metric even necessary?
100%. If we don't have a unified enforceable tracking system at which all they have to create a bottleneck which everything must flow through to keep track of it. We've seen this happen in other industries, like in the alcohol distribution model. You have manufacturers, distributors, and retailers. Manufacturers cannot sell directly to retailers. The reason these structures exist is if you only give out a few distribution licenses, you can track it at the distribution level. And if everything in retail must come from a distributor, then you can watch the distributors instead of watching many manufacturers. You can check everything at one point. So we've seen a similar system created here, and Metric very much is that funnel which everything must flow through. And so I think absolutely there has to be a unified state-run system to keep track of it, because even with the state-run system, as guys have said, we're having difficulties with material bleed over, and building that up and supporting that until it's fully functional and achieving its goal more often than it is now is the way we get there. It's also one of the few things out there that will help cannabis prices hold instead of drop as the market commoditizes is limiting the amount of excess surplus from the black market that's flowing in.
So that was Joe Wynn at Sisu Extracts in Arcata talking about the fact that eventually this is all going to get worked out. Let's hope, huh? Larry, did you learn anything?
Well, as always, yes.
Okay.
But as always with me, I'm a little confused still. So we started out this episode on the basis of what Sheriff Hansel said. He seemed convinced that unregulated weed was getting into the regulated market. And what did we decide? Is that happening or is it not?
Well, I think that there's a possibility that maybe some is. The fact is, though, that everything is being tested at so many places along the supply chain. I kind of like Joe's advice that he gave us during this last hour, and that is whatever you buy these days, make sure it comes from a legal permitted retailer. And I think the other thing that I think is important to take from this is pretty much everybody in this show was saying, as soon as everybody is involved with Metric and Track and Trace, this will help clean everything up eventually.
Yeah, that seemed to be the case. Even Mr. Parrott was saying that, you know, there are the temporary licensees who I understand there aren't very many of, and there aren't not issuing any new temporary licensees.
Right.
Those weren't required to function within the Metric system, and that is probably the source at which most of it is getting into the regulated market. So as that goes away, it should get a little bit tighter. I mean, as Joe Wynn pointed out, though, there's no system that anybody has ever developed that someone can't figure out how to break.
And as he pointed out, and it's true, there are still moonshiners in the hills of North Carolina for whatever reason. So yeah, that's still going to be around. The point is to reduce it and to get prices in the legal retailers at a point where it makes sense to go there instead of the unregulated market. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
I mean, I think, you know, it's just true that, you know, as long as there's someone who's willing to look the other way or open the back door, there's an avenue for it. I'm a little bit more dubious about Hansel's claim that the dispensaries are getting this unregulated product, because everything that's sold in the licensed dispensaries comes with a stamp.
Right.
An official stamp. So unless someone is forging the stamp, I don't really see how it could end up on the dispensary shelf. But, I'm certainly not an expert.
Well, you know, and who knows? It could be that maybe what he's referring to there is that maybe some people are taking a chance with their license that maybe they shouldn't be taking. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it goes. And, you know, here's the other thing. I mean, going all the way back to the fall of 2017, when we first started talking about this on this show, pretty much everybody agreed that when you take a once illegal commodity and bring it to the legal market in a place as big as California, you can expect some bumps in the road. And, you know, we're here. And so I'm not really surprised by this debate or this question at all. I think it's a predictable kind of thing that we're dealing with right now. And eventually it'll get worked out.
Yeah, for sure. It's still a new system.
Are you surprised by some of these issues that come up?
No, given the way that this industry has functioned for the last 30 years, it's not surprising. This is, what, year two or year three of the new regime?
In January of 18, we're coming up on 2 years on January 1st of 2020. And actually, I think you could also make the argument that, you know, yeah, there are some bumps in the road, but I think it's being rolled out as, you know, maybe as well as it could be, given the size of the state and the complexity of what's going on.
Yeah. It also struck me that of all the people that we talked to who participate in the system, I expected to hear a lot more complaints about it, because the way it was described, it sounds a pretty onerous and labor-intensive activity with a lot of different people, with a lot of different record-keeping obligations. And nobody just blasted it you know.
No, in fact, we asked Joe point blank, do you think that metric and track and trace is still at this stage necessary? And yes,
yeah, absolutely.
It is. And keeping in mind that it creates more work, he even has an employee that he's paying for to deal just with that.
Right.
So, you know, you might think there would be reasons why somebody like Joe would say, no, let's just get rid of this and things are going to work out. But that's not what he said at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so. And I think he recognizes what a lot of people recognize is that this is an important thing, and it's important for them to get it right, both for, you know, for commercial purposes. I mean, if you went to all of the trouble and expense and hassle to get legal, you want the legal market to persist,
yeah,
and the unregulated market to fade away, because that is your best protection in terms of your commercial operations.
Absolutely. You're protecting at that point the legal market that you've chosen to pay to belong to and done a lot of work to get into.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, obviously, from a health and safety perspective, it's
of
critically
course.
Important. And this is especially in the news right now.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, it's the health and safety part of this that has been used in just about every state that I know of, and we follow this closely. That's one of the biggest selling points to the voters who decide on this. So it's a big deal.
You know, they named the new mysterious vaping disease.
They've named it?
Yeah.
Who's named it?
The CDC.
Oh, they would know.
So they're calling it, it's an acronym, EVALI, E-V-A-L-I, and it stands for, and I don't think that they had marketing people come up with this, but it stands for e-cigarette or vaping product use associated lung injury.
That was not done by the marketing department.
So they might
that was done by a scientist in a laboratory.
You won't want to rethink that, but I...
But it's probably more accurate being named that way.
I was looking up some statistics because I just wanted to find out where things stand right now. And this is an article in Live Science from 2 days ago, but there have been more than 1,300 lung injuries and 26 deaths as of last week because of this. And the CDC put out a press release earlier today warning that they expect this to increase, quote, considerably. And especially heading into the flu season, since the disease presents with some symptoms that are similar to pneumonia, they're worried that there'll be misdiagnoses, and if it's weakening the lungs, that it could serve as a point of attack for the flu virus and other things. So they're kind of anticipating things getting worse before they get better. And at least as far as I'm able to find from the news, they still don't know. They've got a couple of different theories about what it could be.
What are they saying?
Well, one is that there's oil being added as a kind of a thickening agent to non-regulated vape juice, and that this oil is kind of coating your lungs and preventing it from being able to absorb oxygen. But then there's another faction of research doctors who say, no, I don't think that's it. It seems to be some more kind of weird compound in the vape juice itself. But at this point, they just don't really know. All they know is that it's pretty serious. I mean, when you're a healthy 26-year-old and you die within 24 hours of going to the emergency room, I mean, that's
serious.
A serious thing.
Well, and Joe was saying in our discussion with him that the cartridge manufacturers in California, at least, are banding together to figure out what to do. And in fact, they've all agreed to test for certain contaminants and things like that to try to keep it out of the market here.
Yeah, that was very encouraging because they're doing this on a voluntary basis.
Right.
They're taking extra time and going to extra expense to test for things that they're not required to just
for this.
To be careful about this. So your advice from earlier, I think, is wise. If you're gonna do this, especially now that we don't know 100% what's going on, make sure you're getting it from a regulated source.
And I suppose people could go to the CDC website, is that right, to get information on this, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, and read up on it, which everybody should do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you vape, it makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be careful.
Inform yourself. Good episode. Thank you for your fine work.
Absolutely. Yeah, this was one that was really interesting to dig into after we talked with Sheriff Hansel to see exactly how all this unfolds. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. Thanks to our guests, Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel, Joe Wynn of Sisu Extracts, and Richard Parrott, Director of Cal Cannabis Cultivation Licensing at the State Department of Food and Agriculture. Finally, a huge thank you to our sponsors, the Humboldt County Collective, Eco Groovy Deals, Bear Extraction House, and Lost Coast Science. We'll be back with another edition of the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month. So we'll see you next time, November the 20th, at 6 p.m.